My name's Dave Morrison. This is Libby Morrison. Stand up. Turn around. It's been a while since we've been here the last time. I think it was 3 years ago or four. I don't know, roughly. William's three, so that's it, 3 years ago. We're the Morrisons in what country? Cambodia. Well, we're going to show a presentation. Quick question, where is Cambodia? Asia. That's very good. You get a sweep. Anyone? What countries is it around? Thailand, Laos, and Vietnam. Well done, Shang. You could teach geography. Phnom Penh, this is where we spent our first 3 and a bit years, whatever, learning Khmer, which is the national language, or the trade language. It's the language that most people in the country would speak, do business in, things like that. We then moved up to Ban Lung. That is 530 kilometers, if you can work out the miles. I should have done that by now, but anyway, the amount of talks I've done. But it's, on a good day, is 8 hours by car, and a not so good day, it took us 16, something like that. Just depends on the roads. It's up to here is tarmac, then we took a shortcut across here, which is dirt. Tarmac up to here, and then from here to here is all dirt, and I mean dirt road. You'll see it in a minute. When it rains, which is for 6 months of the year, right through the, well, whatever, it could be up to 6 months of the year, it's muddy and it takes a lot longer if you can get through. Sometimes they have to close the road and you just have to wait. This is the province that we live in, Ratanakiri. We live in a town called Ban Lung. This is our road. This is the start of wet season, so it's not quite all muddy yet. You see people sitting on the side of the road. There'll be a motorbike coming, a car coming towards us. It's basically dodge the potholes. It's a bit of fun. I was telling one of my friends, it's like, you know the arcade games where you're actually back and forth. Never thought I'd actually have to do it, but it's good fun. Sorry? We're running, I know. Jurassic Park, here we come. All right. And then you switch over just to keep her happy. And then, oh, it's not. Back across again. It's a bit noisy in the car. My wife likes to call it a toolbox and wheel. It's my pride and joy. It's a Land Rover. But it has only got stuck once. This is our kids. We have two children. Alex is now 5 and a half. And William, which you can sort of see, he is all there, is 3 years of age. Actually, William is. He likes the Land Rover. But when we come onto the dirt road, they fall asleep. We're glad for that, because if they didn't, Alex starts to throw up. But anyway, the only reason we go on that road is to do our supply run. We go down to Phnom Penh. We try to do it as little as possible, so it could be up to 5-6 months before we go again. And we pile the car up. The roof is full of different things. Could be dog food. Sometimes we buy metal, which is 6 meter lengths, if I'm going to build something up there. Just depends. And the car could have up to a ton and a half of stuff on it. And it's quite cracked. We actually split the roof of the Land Rover. It's a full length roof rack. And with all the weight, it actually split the roof at the front on the thing. So that was even more rattles. But anyway, so Libby loves that car. Yeah, we screwed it back together again. It's a Meccano set. Anyway. This is the only time the car got stuck. Well, the only reason it got stuck is there is a rock there. That's the only reason it got stuck. Other than that, I would have got three. Alright, it's actually only a stone. But now, the only reason we got stuck was this truck broke down or got stuck in the mud, couldn't get up the hill. Everybody else was queued up. They'd been there for an hour and a half. And we came and thought, we're foreigners, we can get through. All right. I thought. My co-worker was there. My wife was not, fortunately. So we walked down first to inspect the place. And we saw the rock and we thought, oh, it's okay, we'll get through. Between a rock and a soft place in this case. But, yeah. Anyway, so we were swimming, you know, flying along, and then all of a sudden slid straight onto the rock. And that was us stuck there. So my co-worker decided we'll go on. There's this boy across the road. You know, he could pull us out. He's got the chains on his tires and all. So he went up. Didn't even have to ask him a question. The boy just said, $20. They're very willing to help. So, keep the car. She would have said, keep the car. But anyway, that is a road. That is a road. Now, this is actually the nicest part of the road. When we came round the corner, I couldn't tell where the road was, except for the fact there was a sheer drop. It just turned into a ploughed field. It was unbelievable. I wish I had taken a photograph, but I didn't want to stop. And that's being honest. Once you get the momentum going, you just don't want to stop. And I was. I'm afraid of heights. They're going to fix this road. In fact, they have hopefully fixed it by now. Now, this is the road to Mundakiri. We don't go on that road very often. And our road will be fixed, apparently, in the next 2 to 3 years, hopefully, if the money doesn't disappear mysteriously. There is a lot of corruption in the country. And countries from outside would give money, and it sometimes disappears. There's a sign up on the way to Preve here, which is another province. And it said, we thank America for the $10 million for the new road. Where's the new road? It's still dirt. So it disappears from time to time. But anyway, right. We've made it up to our house now. This is our house in Banlong. Libby's going to take over for a couple of slides and describe our beautiful house. There's not as many. I had to take some photographs out. I thought a lot of you had seen it before. So.
Well, it's up on stilts. This is David's motorbike underneath, which we all drive. This was the nicest house we could get up there. It's great. It's a big house. It's very cool because we've loads of trees around it, which I thought, don't want trees because it'll be full of mosquitoes, but actually trees are brilliant because it keeps the house cool. This is so romantic, eaten by candlelight, but unfortunately the electric goes off for maybe 8 hours during the day, so we usually have to get the candles out and try and find the food on our plate. This is my helper. Sort of, you know, whenever I first went over there, I thought, I don't want a helper. It's very colonial to have a helper. But our mission said that I did need a helper, and I, you know, you really do need a helper because they know how to cook the food and you don't. So she's great. Sumnang, she's the same age as me. She has 3 children. She's been married 3 times in Cambodia. Husbands just leave the wives with the children and go on to the next one, kind of. The first husband, his mother told him to come home and leave her. The next husband, they built a house and they kept hearing a tapping noise every night. So the husband said the house had been cursed and he left her for that reason. And when they were taking the house down, they did find a nail, another thumb stuck to the post of the house. And then the next husband left her because he said she was too dark. She's absolutely beautiful. Yeah, she's ugly, that's what he said. You're ugly. That's why he left her. But she has been a real blessing to me. She's not a Christian. She only speaks Khmer. I speak a little bit of Khmer, but we're really good at doing, is it charades or where you're, you know, I'm really good at that now. But she has been great. As you can see here, the thing we're cooking on is called an ang. That's what the Khmer cook on. They just put their coal in it, and then when it gets too hot, they take the coal out and put it underneath. And they're brilliant at knowing when to put it in, when to take it out, stuff like that. We're cooking, I think those are deer, and on the kebab sticks, and we're cooking those. They look pretty burnt, but they weren't. I keep forgetting to press the button, or I'll just talk on and on. Anybody guess what David's doing?
Would you guess what I'm cutting up?
Yeah, the leg. Leg.
You get another sweetie.
Oh yeah, we'll keep asking questions. Give them to your friend. We kind of thought we needed, you know, something for the. Somebody told us in the market you go and get dog meat, which I went and asked, and they looked at me like, you want meat for your dog, and then like the poorest people come and get the scraps. They don't have such a thing as dog meat, so I was a bit embarrassed. So we had to buy a leg of a cow and not tell them what we're going to do with it. This is my helper. She's making like a curry, and that is lemongrass. And she taught me you're meant to burn them first and then squash them, you know, to get the juices out. And very good. I've learned a lot from her. This is me in the back of the motorbike. Does anybody know how many people are on the motorbike?
Six. And they can't get more.
There's a basket sometimes
in the front with the stick of babies.
And if I had been thinner, they would have got another one on. I always thought, why are the Asians so thin? Now we know why. They only have a motorbike for transport.
So, what in the town do we live in? Who said that? What again?
Oh, he's listening well. Come on, competition.
Who was it?
Anybody notice any of the vegetables? Ginger, yep. Yep, sweet potato. Parsnips? No. Yeah. And does anybody have a clue? Hold on, I get over here. What this one is? Yeah, who was there the other night? It's actually the flour from a banana plant before the bananas come, and they use it for soups and things, really nice. Never even knew bananas had plants. So that's our local market. It's a dirt market. The cow, 1 minute heading to the market, and then the next minute you go to the butcher's and just tell them what you want. It just gets cut up and hung, and you get there before the flies do, is the idea. Just hangs there all day until all the meat's gone and probably hangs the next day. So you want to get there early to get your meat. Fish. There's a lot of fish up where we are. I just went and looked and just thought, oh, how am I going to do this? But the Khmer eat it all. We went to a wedding and it was just, they brought out this big plate and the fish on it and the big rubber lips looking at you. And I just thought, oh. And the Khmer just got in there with the chopsticks and it was all gone within minutes. Amazing. And the funny thing is at weddings, when they're eating, like, they'll just, everything's in the mouth. If there's bones in, they just spit it on the floor. What was very, because I did wonder why, because the girls wear big long gowns, and I was wondering why they were lifting them as they were walking about. And then I realized it was because of the bones and the everything else they don't want. Your pig, you eat all of the pig in the, anybody know what's in the bags from the last meeting? No. It's the fat from the pigs, and they use it to flavor their foods or to cook with. Different things. Now, going to the market was a shock because it's just dirt, and then of course they're cutting everything and just scraping it down on the ground, so when you come back your feet are just covered in from the market. Yeah, which isn't nice. Rice comes in, you can get so many different kinds of rice. To me, rice is rice, but we're learning what's nice, what turns into like soup, and they know what to use for different things. At the market, you buy everything in a kilo or half a kilo. You come home here, and it's just a shock how much warm pepper is, you know, and different things like that. So out there, everything's so cheap, and you just buy it all in a kilo or half a kilo. Anybody see what it is? Lizard. Yep, we have these in our garden. They're beautiful. And it's fun to watch them because they don't actually make any noise. They just move their head up and down. This is some of the wildlife. William, when he just started walking, came out one morning and found a, what do you call it? It's a moth, but it's from the jungle, a jungle moth. And they're huge. We'd never seen one before, have never seen one again. But absolutely beautiful. Then another day a parrot came, a parakeet maybe. Was sitting on the line, and we kind of thought, oh, if we go near it, it'll fly away, but it didn't. And we brought out that hamster food with nuts and stuff and went up and it fed it. And it walked up and down Alex's arm, walked up and down David's. We put it on William, walked up his, but the claws are, and William's, started crying, and it never sort of came near us again. But you know, it's days like this, those days, you're just tired, you're down, you're missing home or whatever, you're just feeling down, and it's just like the Lord sends you like a little gift of this lovely creature, insects, different things. This will you take over.
Banlo,
is a town that's being developed at the moment. It's like a touristy place. Gordon's brother, Philip, he visited us for a short time. He was doing a tour of parts of Asia, I think it was, and he says, "Can I come up and visit you?" I said, "Sure, be great." So him and one of his friends came up, and we took them on a tour of some of the places. We took them out to the villages, along these wee dirt tracks, out to where it is we work. We live in Ban Lung, and most of the streets now are paved or tarmacked. And as you leave Ban Lung, you head out on roads like this to the different villages. We work with a minority group called the Dumpuan. There are maybe 6 or 8 different minority groups in our province. They all have different languages. We're just working with one group called the Dumpuan. We're trying to learn their language. The reason we spent so long learning Khmer was to use the Khmer language to learn their language. It sounds a bit of a long process, but hopefully as I go along, I'll explain it a bit better. This is just a Khmer person. I'm following him along on the bike. I thought I'd take the camera out and camera him, or photo, whatever it is. You know what I mean. This boy has gone out to sell things to the minority group. They'll take things from the market in the town we live in, take them out to the villagers, and try and sell it off for a profit. Some cases, he could buy something for a couple of dollars and try and sell it for $20. They're just trying to rip the people off as best they can to get as much money out of them, because they believe the people are stupid, because they're not educated and they don't know what things are worth. This is my beloved Land Rover again. The roads that we go out on, this is dry season, but after a wet season, the roads are pretty torn up. They're not level anymore. So when it's wet season, you really need the Land Rover to go out. If we're going out as a family, never get stuck, only once. But if I'm going on my own, I'll go on the motorbike. If we're going as a family, we obviously take this, because I'm not good enough on a motorbike to hold all of us up. I'm actually not that good to hold myself up sometimes, but anyway. This is me coming back. This is during dry season when it's very dusty. Basically, this is not a tan. Keep telling people that. This is dirt, and these trousers, Libby keeps telling people they are blue. Blue, wasn't it? Yes, they turn a greeny shade of brown. Just because of the dust, my hands and feet, my face especially, are covered in lovely stuff. And this is just during the dry season. Wet season's fine. You're just covered in mud, and it sort of flakes off. This is the wet season. Come on down. You just park your bike because it's too dangerous to ride down. If you did get down, you wouldn't get back up again. And I have mud tires on the bike, and it's just basically you're on your side. Or the tribal people, villagers, or whatever you want to call them, they're great. There's no, well, I wouldn't say there's no bother, but they seem to manage it okay. This is arriving in one of the villages. This is called Brat Moi. This is the village that We've been spending a lot of time, and I would be in this village almost every day, for if not all the day, a few hours a day, and then travel around the different ones in the area. These are just some of the houses, just to show you. This would be a richer family. It's got tin on the roof. It's got wooden sides. This is a poorer family. It's rattan or bamboo sides, and then a grass roof. This would have to be repaired quite often. Oh, I should say, they are all up on stilts to different degrees. The richer you are, the higher up they are, obviously. The higher the status, if you want to put it that way. But they are all up on stilts for a reason. Simply because of the animals that are going about, whether it be snakes, lizards, whatever, but they all have them up to keep the animals out of their houses, especially the chickens, things like that as well, which make an awful mess. And also during the day, if it's high enough up, you can hang a hammock underneath to keep you cool. Because inside the house, especially with the tin, it's very warm. And underneath, you get a bit of shade during the day. This is a man called Jin. He speaks very little English. But I've been teaching him English. In return, he has been teaching me Dumpuan. We have books that have Khmer, English, and sometimes Dumpuan. There is another organization that's helping us to translate, and we can use those to teach this person to read his own language, for one thing, but also to teach him to read English and Khmer. He's a very clever young man. It's starting to be written down. There's an organization is actually writing or translating books for them to learn their language, because they obviously can speak it, but they can't read it or write it. Wycliffe, or Wycliffe, however you want to pronounce it. They have an organization out there, or SIL, I don't know if you've heard of those, but they are translating the scriptures. In some cases, they're translating different books, because they're there as an organization to teach the people literacy. So, yeah, he's been translating the Bible. He has got Genesis, some of the Psalms. He has a few other books in the Old Testament. I meant to bring the Bible with me. He has Mark finished, and he has some of the books of some of the letters of Paul's finished as well. He does specific passages in the Bible to do with the teaching. Because we do chronological teaching, he has different passages to do for that. But unfortunately, it's not his only job. It's something that he has to do on the side, if you like, to keep him... to be allowed to stay there, you have to do so many projects for the government, and then you can do your own work as well. So it's a bit of a balancing act. But he would have a group of people translating the scriptures, and then he would do his checks, and he would go over it with them again. So it's not ideal by any means, but it is a work in progress, if you like. But we use different people in the villages. I go to 4, maybe 5 different villages on a regular basis, almost every day, and I will use different people to get different language or different words, and then I will go over it with different people in the village just to practice it. This young fellow is just listening. He wants to laugh at us speaking English. So, as I was saying, we have to do some things to stay in the village or in the country. One of the things is medical work, which I'm not trained for, unfortunately. I would love to be. But this lady came up to me. No matter which village they go into, they'll come up and ask if they have a problem. What, this lady has lost her voice. She couldn't speak. Her husband said it was a good thing, shouting at him too much. But turned out that wasn't the case. It was tonsillitis. We were able to help her in different ways, and eventually she got her voice back. Well, this wasn't the first lady, unfortunately. Yeah.
I went one day with David out to the village, and I mean, he was there 5 minutes, 30 people just screaming and all. I couldn't cope with it.
God has been very good. I've heard different people saying, you know, God makes no mistakes. He prepares you for what it is He's going to, you know, provide, you know, get you to do. And before I left to go to Cambodia, I was working for a medical company, and they gave me quite a lot of things to take with me, if you like. One of them was blood pressure monitors, thermometers, ear probes to see if there's infections, things like that. Everything that they provided me with has come in useful. It's been amazing. Things to see what your O2 is, your CO2 and your O2 and your blood oxygen levels, things like that. It's been amazing to see the things that they have provided. I thought, when am I going to use these? I gave some of them away when I got out there to doctors and people like that, and I kept some. And in the villages, I'm able to do different checks. They think I'm stupid because I want to check their pee and their stool samples in some cases. But, yeah. Anyway. But the things that God has been very good. He's been very faithful in providing doors to be opened, even in the hospital as well. Our Land Rover, again, I have to thank God for the Land Rover. It's used as an ambulance. We've taken the back seats out, and there's enough room for the people to lie flat, because most cases the people can't walk, they can't ride a motorbike. So we'll lie them in flat, and then the wheel arches are used for the people to come and care for them. They'll sit on the wheel arches and look after them. And they also have to be in the hospital with them to feed them, to bath them, to do whatever, because the hospitals over there aren't like here, obviously. If you don't have food with you, you don't eat. If you don't have somebody to look after you, you're on your own. Different ages come up. This wee girl, I think it's a wee girl, yes, had a fever. When they have a fever out there, when they have diarrhea, when they're vomiting, they completely stop intake of fluids, of food, and that's why they quickly die. It's educating them. one of the things that I've been trying to do is to educate the people, not to put more layers of clothes on. They would cover them in blankets. They would basically try to sweat it out of them. And that sends their fever sky high, obviously. So it's educating them what to do. And a worst case scenario, then we get medicine for them. We try to avoid that if possible. This is Libby out in one of the villages. The kids run about naked. I've tried to blur it out a wee bit. But anyway, not allowed to show that. Sorry. Yes, the kids are naked. The man has clothes on. He has the loincloth that Bob wanted me to wear tonight. And it's too cold, sorry. But the boys are actually more muscly than me, so I would be ashamed to do that. But anyway, yeah, that's for sure. But this lady that's very happy looking, not Libby, the one behind her, is actually drunk. Libby didn't work this out until I told her what she was talking about. But they're very jolly people. No matter what time of the day, they're drinking. But again, I'll explain a bit more about that too. But because I was taking a photograph, she wanted money. I says, I'm not
giving. I was glad I didn't understand. That's why I'm just
saying. Then I was joking with her. I said, okay, you give me $10 and I'll give you $10 back, all right? And that way I'm paying you for your photo. No. Thought I would have got away with it, but no. When we take the car out as a family, basically people come running over. They want to see what you've got with you today or whatever. Some people come looking for medicine. This girl here had strep throat, the girl in the pink. She had it for 3.5 years. I'm surprised she wasn't dead. But actually it turned out it was her and her sister had it. And we took her back and forward to the hospital, and eventually she did get better. When I take the Land Rover out, if it's not as a family, it's to bring people into the hospital, as I said, as an ambulance. And this day, whenever I was about to leave, one of the ladies came running over to me and said about her husband was dying. I think I shared about this in the studio, in Ballygowan last week. She came running over and said, my husband's dying. Can you help quick? So I took the car up and I was going to get him to come out. But the father said, no, he was a witch doctor. He said, no, you can't take him anywhere until I sacrifice to the spirits. These people are animistic. This is another reason why the Khmer think they're silly, they're stupid, because of their beliefs. They believe in sacrificing animals to the spirits to make people better. If you're sick, it's because a spirit has come inside you and made you sick. He had to go and do a sacrifice before I was allowed to take his son to the hospital, even though his son was dying. That's how much they believe. This man in the middle is my co-worker John. He's John Smedley from America. He is a very gifted linguist. He's learning the language very quick. I wish I could learn as quick as that. You shouldn't covet though. So I'm just putting up with what God has given me. Unfortunately, two weeks before we were to come back, A week before we were to come back, he had an accident. We were on our way out to one of the villages. I was coming behind him, and 3 or 4 dogs ran across the road. He had nowhere to go, and he went straight into them. And he came off. He broke his shoulder bone and his just below his knee. And basically, because of this, he wasn't able to use crutches because it was the same side. And what we had to do was strap him, his leg straight to a bit of wood which was this wide, straight down his leg, and taped it up so it couldn't move. And he then had to be lifted into a van and then taken down the, probably took them about 14 hours to get to Phnom Penh to see a hospital. Because of the work I do with the people, I would go to the hospital every week, and you go in at night. I would be in 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night some nights, bringing people in. And basically, if there's been an accident, people come in bleeding. The blood goes all over the, you know, have you ever been to NE or casualty? There's a triage room which they come and inspect you, see what's wrong with you. Well, out there, if it's blood on the floor, it stays there until the next day. And there was this, anyway, it was quite thick of blood. And you just walk through it in your flip-flops and you get on with it. So we decided not to take our co-worker to the hospital. we decided to send him down to Phnom Penh, and then in turn he went to Thailand to get treatment. You don't want to get sick out there. Again, the sellers come out from Ban Lung. They sell whatever they can. One illustration was they were selling a lantern, which is this size, and it had a compass on top. Have you ever seen the wee compasses, the wee fake ones on top? Well, the Khmer were telling the people that they're solar powered. Never have to put a battery in it again. And what they had done was they super glued the battery compartment so you couldn't get it open. See, there's no batteries in it. So because the people had heard of solar panels, they thought, oh, class, this is great. So instead of buying a lantern for $2, they sold it for $18. So this was in this village. When I went to the village, the man showed it to me. I says, that's a fake. That is not solar. He says, no, it is, because they charged me $18. I says, it's not. So then I rang my friend in the next village up, and he says, yes, they just came in, but they sold it to us for $16. They got it cheaper. So he was happy. So then I rang all the other villages that I knew, and the word got around to the head, the village chiefs, and they weren't able to sell to any more of the people that we knew, thankfully. But this is an illustration of how the Khmer want to take advantage of them. And we're there trying to show them that we don't want to take advantage of them. One of the main problems they have out there is water. A lot of sicknesses are caused. There's cholera, giardia, amoeba, all these different illnesses. I've got most of them except for cholera, thankfully. It's caused by water, by eating there, by their hygiene, things like that. So what we were able to find were water filters. In Phnom Penh, we were able to bring 200 of them up to Ban Lung. We hired a truck and brought them all up. And basically, we sold them to the people. We didn't give them away for a good reason. Another organization had decided to give things away. They give away these water filters. Basically, you put as dirty a water as you can get, which is what they drink, into the top of this, and out the bottom comes nice, cold drinking water. Kills all the bacteria in it, and you can drink it straight, no problem. No need to boil. Some of the people that are more cautious would boil their water, but they still use ordinary water for cooking with and all that there. They still get sick. Anytime I go out to the village and eat, I get sick. They get sick too, though. It's not just the foreigners. We sold it to them because the organization that gave them away, they came back to the villages a few weeks later to find they were being used as flower pots, as things for feeding pigs. So it was no longer used for what they were buying. Because the people thought it's no value. It's not important. You put a price on it, it's got a value. And we want this to stop them getting sick. This is just a video night we had to educate them on the use of them. This is in Khmer. So again, this is we showed it to them in Khmer, and then we asked them what they understood of it, and then we had to explain in their own language, or at least we had to get translators to explain it in their own language what it actually meant. Because of their understanding of Khmer is so small, they don't always get. That's why we have to learn their language to share the gospel with them. We want it to be clear. We want them to understand the first time they hear. This again is just a picture of the village. This is Prat Moy again. I'm focusing on this village for a reason. Whenever we came back, a few months after we arrived back in Northern Ireland, we got word to say that we have now been granted permission to live in the village, this village. We will be our co-workers will, they're actually building a house at the moment to get moved into this village. They will be the second foreign family to move into a village in all of Cambodia. And the other family is a New Tribes Mission family as well. So we have a lot to be thankful for to God. There's been people in this province trying to get into the villages for the last 10 years, possibly longer. And God has worked things out now to allow our co-workers to move in. We wish we were there too, but again, God is in control. He knows. Back to that shot. Now, this is just some of the houses in Prat Moy again. One of the first times I went out to it, this rope, there's a rope around the house, and it's like a cordon with branches hanging on it. This is a sign to say, do not enter. Inside, they're worshipping a spirit because there's a person that is sick. They have sacrificed an animal, and if you were to break that cordon, you will make the person sick and die, sicker and die, or you yourself will become sick. So you have to stay out. This is what the people tell you. If you, I went to walk across and they come running. Don't go! Don't go! Because they believe it so much. Now, I can... The relatives can come out, but the person that is offering up to the spirit cannot leave the house. He has to stay there. He's not allowed to leave at all, not even to go to the toilet. That can be for one day, if it's a small illness, 3 days, or 5 days, depending on what's wrong with them, and depending on what they've sacrificed. They can kill a chicken, they can kill a pig, or they can kill a buffalo. And all this is part of their income, which they have to sacrifice to the spirits. That's another reason why they stay so poor. This man here is the village chief. He doesn't look anything fancy, but he's a very nice man, very helpful. God has seen fit for me to help most of the members in his family. The first time it was his daughter, then his wife, and then a couple of his other children. His son was 19 years of age, and he came to me. He said, my son's got a sore foot, and I went up to look at him, and his foot was hanging off. The houses are held up with these pillars, and he was building a house, and one of these pillars had fell straight on the back of his foot, ripped it. I thought, what am I going to do with that? So I cleaned it, and I cleaned it up, I bandaged it up, and then I says, there's nothing else I can do for it. He says, it's okay, we're going to get somebody to come and sew it. I go, sew it? What do you mean? Right? Because the same word is sewing, you know. I've got to see this. So eventually this boy came, and he gets his box out, and he says, oh, he's going to stitch it, right? I'm a bit slow, I'm from Northern Ireland. But he gets out the needle and thread, and I'm sitting watching. Hang on, you're not going to give him an injection? Oh, aye, right enough. Gets an injection, sticks it in him, doesn't wait to let it take effect, he just and the young fella is in agony. I mean, but he just sits there. You know, you see his face. But it's amazing. What the pain threshold. There's another boy, it's a good one. A young fella, I think he was 17 years of age. He couldn't walk properly. I looked at his leg, and didn't look anything in particular wrong with it, except a small hole in the top of it and a small hole at the side of it. Inside of his leg was rotten. I was able to syringe hydrogen peroxide in one side and out the other, and it was all different colours coming out of it. But anyway, eventually, after doing that continuously for 10 days, every day, and bandaging up, putting stuff on it, eventually it got better. And he was able to walk again. But I mean, I was syringing stuff into his leg, and he was just sitting there as if I was tickling him. I went, nobody can do that. And his daughter was 4 years of age. She had walked on a piece of glass and split her foot open. And I had to try and close it up again and keep it clean. And she just sat there. The pain threshold is amazing. And this is from no age. This man is probably in his 80s. I just brought him back from the TB hospital. Out there, if you get TB, you have to go to the hospital to take your medicine every day for 3 months. So you're not at home for 3 whole months. You live on site. This is, I think your brother actually went to see this man in the hospital. I wouldn't let him go into the TB hospital, but they were able to walk around. That's Gordon's brother. Was able to walk around the hospital and have a laugh at their hygiene. It's not very funny, but anyway. But this man, even though he's so old and he was so sick, he has to keep working because they have to work to get money to feed themselves. There's no support out there. Now, can you see his ear there? The way it's stretched out? Any idea why it's stretched out like that? Anyway. It's a sign that they like to smoke. They roll tobacco in banana leaves, and then they smoke it, and when they're finished or it goes out, they stick it in their ear to keep it for later, because they need their hands for working. And then whenever they want another smoke, they take it out, light it up again, and away they go.
In their ear?
In their ear. That's why there's a big hole. It's stretched the way down. No. There may be a photograph of one later on, we'll see. but it's not in their ear. But that's what they do. That's, so as you get older, it gets bigger and bigger. Oh, yeah, there's always a hole. They do pierce their ears, and then they put it in there, and then it just gradually gets bigger and bigger. That's good. Questions? Any questions? Feel free to ask. What are they doing? Very good question, Bob. What are they doing, Bob? You should know. The toilet's blocked. They're pounding rice to make flour. They don't have wheat out there, they just have rice, so they pound it. They make flour for their it's not even bread, but it's sort of a bread, and also to make curry paste and things like that. But it's put into most of their food. Any idea what they're doing here? He's dancing. Sorry? Yes, that's right. That's good. What they're doing is they're going around putting holes in the ground, and then these people are coming with the seeds and putting them in. No, not actually, I was surprised. The men have the easy job in this village. I went to a different village, and the men were actually helping the women. This village, the people wouldn't. The men, no, that's the women's job. We don't do that. Because they have to bend over and they have to put them in. They take a handful of seeds out of this. This is a bamboo, bit of bamboo that's hollow in the middle. They have it filled full with rice seeds. They just tip it up, take a handful, put it in, go to the next hole, and you'll see them using the end of the bamboo to close in the hole again. They're very, very good. And they'll do the whole field like that. Now, the reason there's so many of them, there could be up to 15 people in the field. They'll help each other. So one day we'll do my field, the next day they'll do your field, and they'll go around everybody. That way it gets done quicker. No. That's just trees they've cut down. They're slash and burn. So they'll cut the trees down, and if they can use the wood, they'll use the wood, but in most cases they just burn it. This boy didn't do a very good job of burning because of the rains. Sometimes they get caught out. They have to slash it all down, clear it all in a certain period of time, and then burn it. If they wait too long, the rains have come and it won't burn. If they do it too quick, they'll not be able to stop the fire once it spreads. So they have to wait until it's in between being dry and wet. The lighter, yep, they do actually. This is just a row of people. They just have to work around the wood. They just climb over it. There's actually to do their borders where they're doing the straight lines for the piercing. One boy goes up with his feet where because it's all been burnt, he just marks it along this here and marks all the charcoal right up the field so they keep it on a straight line. Not quite as. There is a young man. The oldest man that we have met is 104. He works. I've seen him out miles from the village going to his garden. And it takes him a long time. It takes him a long time because he can't walk right. I shouldn't laugh at that, but you know. But he's walking along with his sticks, to get him out to the village. Because he can't stand up straight. But he has nobody else to look after him, to feed him. So he has to do it himself. And he has a couple of grandkids, obviously, that come along to help him and things like that. But the reason they know he's that age is because of the wars that he's fought in. He can remember when he fought in one of the wars, and that was how they traced back what age he was. But there's people in this field maybe in their 70s planting. There's people from 8 years of age, the youngest, right up until 70 or whatever. To a certain extent, but the older ones, if they're not helping themselves, and they'll do a wee bit, but they'll not get as much as they need to. They're expected to go out and work, but there is a school. There is a school that teaches them Khmer for four days or possibly 5 days a week for 2 hours a day. That's when it's not harvest time or planting time. And that's when the teacher comes. Now, this village was fortunate in that the man that was teaching me was the teacher. So I was able to teach him English, and then he was able to teach them the English in return. So he is their Khmer teacher, but he also teaches them a bit of English as well. You'll find it's the one person that does pretty much everything. That one man is also in charge of malaria control for that area, so he will be able to distribute medicine. If you've got a fever at night, you go to him and he'll test you. If you've got malaria, he'll give you the medicine. It's all provided by an organization, and it's free of charge. It should be. But he is not the type of person that will help you. If he knows there's somebody sick, he won't go to you. You have to be brought to him. Doesn't matter if you can't walk or not. I experienced that in one case where there was a man which was on the outside of the village. He has nothing to do with the village. He was just a worker. But he had a fever. He was delirious. He couldn't walk. And what had happened was he had gone to his boss's house for something to eat the night before. Might have been two nights before. He had fallen sick. And the boss didn't want him to die in his house. So he took him back to the field where he was working and left him. This is at the edge of the village. And the first we heard was, there's a boy sick down the road. Would you come and look at him? And I was, right, come on, let's go. And he said, no, he has to come to me. What? He says, he can't walk. And he'll come eventually. So eventually I went out. And we went out to the place. It's just a wee shack with a bit of plastic over the top of it. The air is blowing, you know, and he's just lying there. Couldn't eat, couldn't drink. Don't know how long he's been lying there for. It could be one day at least, possibly two. And he doesn't even know his name. You know, you ask him, what's your name? Can you talk? Nothing. And this boy wouldn't even come to him. So eventually I got him, you know, come. I'll help you. I'll pay you for your fuel if you want. You know, that way. So eventually we got him. And we ended up, we got an ambulance. Because I was out in the motorbike that day and there's no way he could get in on a motorbike. So we got an ambulance to come out. We had to pay a wee bit. But an ambulance came out, picked up the person, went into the hospital. I went to visit him. Nobody had bothered to go and see him in the hospital. And I brought him some food. And it turned out he was from two provinces over. And he had no family in the province. So I came back and forth a few days. And within 3 days, he was back in the village again. It was unbelievable. And I thought this boy was going to die. And the man in charge of malaria, he said, I'm not giving him medicine, because if I give him medicine, he dies, I'll get in trouble. But you could save his life. No, but if he dies, I'm in trouble. So I'm not touching him. I won't. Anyway. Very helpful people. Bob, what's this lady doing? Can you remember? Nets. Looking for nets. It's a very social thing to do. I don't have that problem either. But yes, they have all of longer hair, the ladies, and they're searching for nets. And it's a good way, you know the way you talk to your hairdresser? Well, they'll talk away to their friends as they're doing it. Nice social thing to do. And they do it very regularly, so there's not a big problem out there. This is one of the older ladies. She could have walked. It's 20 kilometers to get to the town, the market, and they'll sell their stuff, and then they'll buy some other things with the money they make and head back out to the village. There's a man in Bratmoy, the village I'm in, and he's blind. And I've seen him walking along the road with his stick to Banlong. He'd go to the market, buy his stuff, and go back out to the village in the same day. Unbelievable. Just Daniels along with his stick. And I've stopped, picked him up, take him in. And I said, what are you doing? There's days when it's pouring down rain. Picked him up. And my wife's sick. I have to get medicine for her. Nobody else will do it for him. They've all got motorbikes. And I saw a man from the village flying past him. Didn't stop to pick him up. He's blind. He can't see you. What? Oh. They don't help each other very much. This young boy... it was one of the nights I was staying over. It was a funeral. And this young fella, he had a fever all night long. Nobody told me about it until the morning. They said, oh, that wee boy over there is sick. I was right there. I had the medicine all with me. I was able to get the fever down without the medicine, thankfully. And I explained to the woman, she's scraping him, trying to get the evil spirit out of him. His back will be red, raw, because she's scraping it with... Sometimes they use knives. Sometimes this is using just a spoon. But... this is how they say they're getting the spirit to come out. They call it gok yol, which is scraping the wind out of you, or scraping the spirit out of you. But anyway. This is the cigarette we were talking about earlier. It's just basically a banana leaf filled with tobacco, and they light it up and they puff away at it, and then she'll put it in her ear. They only have one ear that's pierced though, so it's alright. This lady, she lost her son. They had gone visiting family or friends, and he drowned in the river. Body was never found. And she stopped eating. She stopped drinking. She couldn't sleep at night. I was trying to help her as best I could, but completely hopeless case. The witch doctor came to her and said, "Your son is hungry. He wants this food today." And she would have to go and buy the food, in some cases from him. But she would have to pay every time she got advice from him, and go and place that. They made a grave outside the village for her to go to, because she was so distraught. And this was a way to keep her in poverty again, but also to get money for the witch doctor. So he would say, "Oh, today your spirit is about, your son's spirit needs this, needs that." And those people in the village actually said, "You know, your son's spirit came to me last night and says, 'My mummy hates me. She didn't give me food.' Or, 'My mummy hates me. That's why I drowned.'" And she is in agony. And that's how much they believe it, because the witch doctors twist what little they know. This lady, what's she doing? Bob? Not playing a musical instrument. She's weaving. This is how they make their loincloths. They would make a fabric. They basically weave it, and that can be made into skirts, shirts, things like that. The witch doctors would use this material whenever they're doing their practices, special occasions, things like that. Other than that, the material is just sold to tourists. It's a way to make money. Because it's so... Sorry? All the stuff now is bought. They used to make it. In the olden days, they just made it themselves from one of the plants out there. But now it's far cheaper just to buy the stuff that's imported from, it's probably polyester or whatever. It's just thread. But one bit of cloth could take them a week to make, and they'll sell it for $3. Yeah. Now there's organizations trying to get them to do it again, and it's a way for them to make good money. It's a lot more money than they would make in the fields. So they're trying to encourage that to keep it up. But before, this is the only cloth they had. A lot of the people would be running about naked, except for the loincloth. An organization came out maybe 10, 15 years ago, whatever, and gave them clothes to get them all clothed, because that was part of the government's remit. They wanted them to be all modern or whatever. But we had one case. Anyway, right, never mind. We'll move on. This is their school. It's just basically they're taught the alphabet. This is ga, ka, go, ko, mo. There is 33 consonants, 26 vowels. Depending on which consonant you use with the vowel, it changes the sound of the vowel. So it takes a long time. They only get 2 hours a day for whatever time it is they have, for up till year six, possibly thereabouts, if they're fortunate. After that, it's too expensive. They don't go into town to get more education. That, in turn, is why the Khmer think they're stupid, because they're not educated. All they need the language for is to communicate in the market. At home, in the village, they're using their own language. So if I'm speaking to them, I have to use Khmer until I get them fluent. In the homes, I can't understand what they're talking about. I can get bits and pieces. This is just cooking in the fields. When they're working, they have to cook for the people that are working for them. The man in this house was sick for a long time. Because he was sick for a long time, the witch doctor said, "The house is cursed, you have to move out." So he's leaving this big house. You can see this bit in the middle. The front, this is where they sacrificed the animals, put them on. They had to leave that house, and he's moving into just a shack. It's not there, it's just made out of bamboo. This is the skin of the animal. It will hang out to dry for up to 4 weeks. They'll use that then for their drums, for their rituals, or else they'll sell it on to somebody else. This is part of the ceremony as well. They weave this elaborate, don't know what you want to call it, out of bamboo or rattan, and this is placed to let the spirits know there's a ceremony coming on. There'll be food for you soon. Come and make everything all right. This lady is brewing her home brew. It's like a potting sort of thing, or whiskey, whatever it is. She distills the alcohol. They'll drink this at the ceremonies to get them drunk. This is another form of alcohol. It's the rice. They cook the rice up. They mix it with yeast. Here, they mix it in with the yeast, and then they put it into this jar here, and then they let that sit for a few weeks, a few months if they can, to ferment, and then that is their alcohol as well. They just pour water on the top and they'll drink that at their ceremonies. The idea of the ceremony is basically to get drunk. If you're drunk, you're happy. If you're happy, the spirits are happy. The Tampuan, no. There are people working with the Kurun people. There's actually three, possibly four organizations working with them. There is one organization working with a Kavet, which is another people group. There's another group called the Kral. There's two groups with it. There's a Jirai people group. There is two different organizations working with it. The Tampuan and the Kavet were the ones that were least reached. The Tampuan have got a small church in one province that has been started up with Khmer. The teaching in it isn't very good, so we don't know how, if they are actually believers or not. But that's the only work that's being done with this, the Tampuan people. That's why new tribes have picked them to work with them. We can't share the gospel. No. When you see people dying, it's very hard. That is one of the greater challenges to us, because when you see a person dying, you want to share the gospel with them, because you know where they're going to go. But in sharing with them, if that means that somebody else is going to misunderstand what you're telling them and ruin their chances of eternity, we can't take that risk. Because when we share with somebody that's dying, everybody hears. And if we give the message in Khmer and they take it up wrong and they start spreading it throughout the village, that whole village could be put off and not want to hear. And that is a thing that we have struggled with, especially there was a...
It's hard to see other organizations do it in Khmer and don't learn the language of people that they're preaching. And then, I mean, they're doing what God's called them to do. You can't say anything, but sometimes you realize what it is they've gotten from the Khmer. You know, a lot of the missionaries up there now are starting to do the chronological teaching, which is great. They realize that what their believers understand isn't really enough. So now they're going back and they're doing the chronological teaching, because a lot of missionaries go in and teach about Jesus, not really about God, and then it all gets mixed up, because then you're going back to who God is, and so now they're realizing they need to go back and teach them from the right beginning. So.
There has been a few cases where people have said they believed, but they've just added to what they already believe. And then they go on out and they start sharing the gospel, but their lives haven't changed. They still beat their wives. They still do all these other things. And people look at that as saying, oh, they're Christians. Why do we want to change our belief? That's just adding another God to what we already believe. So there was one situation where it became very evident. A lady was dying of cancer. We were told a week to live. We went out. We got her medication to try and prolong her life, make her quality of life better as well. She lived for a month. We were going in and out, trying to assess what she could understand, what she could deal with. But it was becoming more and more clear that even when it was coming to asking her how she was feeling, she couldn't understand what we were asking her in Khmer. She had to get it translated by her husband or by other family members. So if we were to try and share the gospel with her in Khmer, there was no chance she would even pick up a tent with it. John and I had decided to go. That was less than a mile. We had travelled 20 miles almost to where this village was. 1 mile before the village, that's where the accident happened. And I went back 2 days afterwards and she was dead. So... Right. Sorry. This is a wedding. The distinguishing marks, the groom, the bride, the white cotton around their heads. This shows the people who's getting married. These are their best clothes. Basically, 2 days, one at the bride's parents, one at the groom's, groom's parents. Drinking till you're drunk. You collapse at night. That's a sign that you're happy with your parents, your in-laws, and the spirits will be happy as well. So you have to be unconscious the 2 nights of your wedding. This is during the night. They get up, they dance around, beating their drums around the totem pole or whatever you want to call it. And this is to get the spirits happy as well. They'll put food and drink on the totem pole for the spirits to come and feast as well. Basically, it's just a drinking session. Doesn't matter what age you are. They start drinking from maybe 13, 14, right through to whatever age. Most of the people in this picture I've had to treat because they were so drunk they've fallen over and damaged their leg or their arm or something. And then they get infections. Again, age is doesn't matter. This is actually the village chief's mother-in-law. I've had to treat her a few times. And God again has used that for us to get very close with the village chief, and that's part of the reasons why we've been given permission to move into the village. This is at a funeral. There's no difference between a funeral and a wedding. It's basically a drinking session. People aren't allowed to be sad at the funeral until the person's being put into the grave and they're about to leave. This was a 5-day funeral, and they dance all night, or whenever they start to lose puff, they'll sit and watch a movie or listen to music. And this is to keep the family company, because the family don't want to be left alone with the spirit that's wandering around. And people will come from all over the area. These are the men that are in charge of the body, the pallbearers, whatever you call them. They're the ones that have to look after the spirit, bring drink to the spirit, or the body, or whatever you want to say, and keep it happy. These are the ones that have to be the drunkest. This man here, he danced until, I think it was 1 o'clock at night. He collapsed beside my hammock on a piece of tin, and every so often through the night you'd hear the rumble of the tin. And at 5 o'clock or 5:30 in the morning, the music started up again, and this is how they dance, by the way. They dance with their hands. It's very nice. And he was lying unconscious as far as I could see, and all I saw was his hand going up like this, and then the other hand, and then he sat up, and then he got up as if he had never stopped. Started drinking, you know, dancing again. And I thought, this boy's possessed or something. It was weird. But this is what they have to do to keep the spirits happy. This, again, you'll see these jars that I was showing you earlier, they're filled with the rice wine, and there could be 8 of them. I know, I have to hurry up, sorry. 8 of them in a row, they have to drink out of each of them until they're drunk. Sorry. Right. You see, and this is actually a wedding. Exactly the same. This is the body or the coffin in the grave. This bird was killed as soon as the person dies, the chicken, and it's the food for the spirit. Never leaves the body, never leaves the coffin's side. As soon as it's put in the grave, this rope is tied to it, tied to the coffin, and then, I think I've got the house. Yes, that rope goes up to the top of the house. That is the rope to guide the spirit up to heaven. They want the spirit to go to heaven, to leave the place, and never come back and annoy people again. So they do believe in heaven. They do believe in happily ever after. Yeah. But everything that the person possessed is put into the grave with him. While it be money, it's ripped up, thrown in. While it be his knife, all broken, watches, everything's broken, thrown into the grave. So the spirit will not come back to the house to haunt the people. This is the moving house. It's quite heavy. So there's people right around it, and they'll just move it around, and then they'll bring it right around. This is the village chief's father-in-law, his house. Sorry? They're actually just moving it around because he's building a new house here, and it's in the way. So they weren't moving it very far, thankfully. And this is a man repairing his roof, just grass weaved together. And they'll use that for their roof. There's another man, this boy here, he's got married, he's living at his in-laws. He'll build this house, and whenever he leaves, they live with their in-laws for the first, could be a year, 2 years. Whenever they leave there, he's leaving in this house, and he's going to go and live with his parents. And he'll stay there for a few years, and then he'll go on to his own. So this is a gift to his in-laws whenever he leaves. This is how they build the houses. They stack them up, they build all the frames together, and then they lift them up. They'll have a house raising ceremony where everybody, all the men in the village will come, help out. The women will all get together and cook, and whoever's building the house has to pay, you know, pay them with food and drink. Yep. They'll just go out, cut all the stuff down, and they'll lift it up like this. This is all in one day. They'll start at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they'll just raise it up as much as they can, and then the rest of it's up to the person that's actually building the house. They have a saw out there that runs off a generator. That's how they do most of it. Some of them will cut it by hand. Just depends what they have. Some of them are chainsaws, and they're very good with the chainsaws. They'll actually cut these posts with chainsaws out in the forest. It's all illegal, of course. Oh, there's one missing there. See you again. That's it over. Right. Sorry about that. It took a bit longer than I was expecting. Just want to leave a few verses with you from 2 Corinthians chapter 4. I apologize for going over time. 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 3. 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 3. But if our gospel be hid, it is hid to them that are lost, in whom the God of this world hath blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them. For we preach not ourselves, but Christ Jesus the Lord, and ourselves your servants for Jesus' sake. For God, who commanded the light to shine out of darkness, hath shined in our hearts, to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. We are there to share the gospel with them. As I was saying, we don't have enough of the language to share the gospel with them yet, but we go into the village on a daily basis and we live the gospel to them. We share with them the kindness of God if we can. We show them that we are not afraid of the spirits like they are. We show them through our lives the testimony that God wants us to. And that, again, every time I come back, I ask you to pray for that. That we live right before the people. Because we are their only witness out there. There are no other Christians in that village. No other witness of what a Christian should be. And if we don't live right before those people, why would they want to know? Why would they care to hear the word of God? We go there, we help the people in different ways, in the hope that whenever it comes time to share the gospel with them, that we have lived right before them, and they will want to see why. Why do we not take advantage of them? Why do we show them love? You know, it shows you, just those slides there, how the devil has been blinding the people. No, but that verse, although it says they're blinded by the God of this world, there's a hope in it. It says the ones that are lost are blinded. The people that God has set aside will not be blinded. They'll see the light and they'll be changed. Just as each one of us that are saved and know God or know Jesus as their Savior were changed. We once were blinded as well. And these people are blinded the minute. When they hear the gospel, they'll want to change. They'll want to take Jesus as their Savior. And that is the hope. You know, they're serving Satan. They're serving the spirits at the minute because they have no other choice. We can bring them the Word of God. We can share that with them. And we're trusting God to change their lives. And that is what we ask you to pray. We thank you very much for supporting us over the time that we've been there. We could not be there without your prayers, without your support. And we thank you for that. But please continue to pray for missionaries out there, for us that we can go back again. We're back. We've been back since July. We're hoping to go back in July, but we don't know for certain yet. We just pray that you will pray that God will lead us and even enable us to go back.